All right, Alexander, let's talk about the purge that is going on. And boy, how many times have we heard from the neoliberal elite globalist crowd? Oh, stop whining about Facebook and Twitter. They can ban someone. It's their right. It doesn't go against free speech, everybody. And you know what? You know what? If you have a problem with Facebook or Twitter, just build your own. Go ahead and build your own if you have a problem with it. Well, Parler went and they built their own. And what do you have happen? You have Amazon Web Services, which is infrastructure cloud hosting, ban, throw out Parler, actually stop their hosting. And you have the app stores, Apple and Google, ban the Parler app. And so there you go. You have a company that had good intentions to start their own service. Free market economy, the United States of America, capitalism, freedom to do business, freedom to express yourself. And what do you have? You have a cartel in Silicon Valley that teams up to remove competition. And one interesting note, Alexander, people may not know this, but I did some research into this. Amazon and Twitter on December 22nd inked a deal for Twitter to host all their infrastructure with Amazon on the Amazon cloud because Twitter was doing so bad with their expenses and things were going so wrong for Twitter, continual losses, that they decided they needed some help. And who did they call? They called Amazon. So it shouldn't surprise anyone that Amazon is going to bat for such a valued customer. Even though Parler was their customer, I'm sure Twitter was infinitely bigger than Amazon as far as the amount of money they would pay to Amazon hosting.
Well, I think this is absolutely right. I mean, what is happening is that we have an effective cartel. I mean, we've discussed this on previous programs. We're now seeing it in operation. Twitter has taken a massive move, which was obviously to ban Donald Trump and some of his supporters. It's seen a vast number of people leave Twitter as a consequence. I've been reading various, sometimes fairly mainstream conservative people. Byron York is a good example. Byron York was, when I saw him, when I last checked him a few hours ago, he said that he'd lost something like 30,000 Twitter followers. That's Byron York, one person. So, I mean, there's a mass movement out of Twitter. So there is a concerted attempt by the various other big social media tech companies to try to support Twitter by suppressing Parler, which is Twitter's major competitor and rival. And of course, there is financial issues because we've seen that Amazon now is going to be hosting Twitter. But there's also, it must be said, political and ideological ones in that they're not happy with Parler, and we've seen what they've been saying about Parler and the kind of people who appear right on Parler. So they're acting to try to choke off Parler because, firstly, it's in their interests, their economic interests, to keep their cartel, the little group, if you like, of big tech companies together. And at the same time, it's their ideological perspective, which is engaged as well. Now, the big question is, will this work? I understand from all sorts of people that it won't. You are much more familiar with this kind of thing than I am, but none of this is surprising me. And I should perhaps inform you and our viewers that one country that's been following all of this very closely is China, and there's already been commentaries about this in the Chinese media. And the Chinese have been pointing to the fact that all these actions in the US taken by the big tech companies show that, the way the internet is run in the US isn't turning out to be that different from what China does. That's what the Chinese are saying. You may not agree, but that's what the Chinese are saying. And I think that the US actually is completely different from China. And though I am not technically versed in these things, I predict that this attempt to close the, to seal up the internet in the end isn't going to work, and we will be moving towards greater division and fragmentation and competition, which, to be very clear, is a good thing. Now, can I also make one further point? I haven't looked into this in any detail, but I would have thought that the events of the last few days open up the route to all kinds of legal steps being taken by some of the people who have had their accounts with Twitter, in effect, permanently suspended, which I presume means closed. And some of these people, Donald Trump, for example, probably have the financial resources to bring legal claims, which they could take all the way up to the Supreme Court of the United States. And we will see how that works out. So I think this has been a major mistake. I can understand why it happened. I suspect it has probably been under preparation for a very long time. But the example of Gab, which you cited, is a good one, because the same attempt was made with Gab, and I think it failed. And we will see the same thing happening with other companies too. Whether Parler will be one of them or not, I don't know.
No, definitely Gab showed everyone the way out of this walled garden. So all Parler has to do is just follow Gab's example. And hats off to Gab, because I'm sure it must have been a very difficult, stressful time that they went through when everyone was coming after them, not only the Twitters and the Facebooks, and not only the Amazons and the web hosting, but also the payment providers, the PayPals, the Visas, and the MasterCards. But Gab made it out. Now, I believe, Alexander, that there was a court ruling. I'm not sure the time, how long ago it was, but and I think it may have been at the Supreme Court level, that Trump's Twitter account was, in essence, a public utility of sorts, because Trump had gone to, or the Trump White House wanted to block some people that were following him, and I think it was the Supreme Court. I may be wrong, and maybe users in the comments can correct me, but the court ruling was, no, you cannot block American citizens from accessing your Twitter feed, because it is, in essence, a public service for the American people, very much in the same way that you may need social media to know if the electricity has gone out in your neighborhood, or if there's an emergency. You know, you may need an SMS, or you may need a tweet, or you may need a post on Facebook in that type of way, or you may need to search for it. So that was the Supreme Court ruling. And now you have Twitter going out and banning Trump, a very aggressive act, very aggressive, a very violent act. What do you make of what I've said?
Well, I agree. I mean, we should be careful before we use words like violent, but certainly aggressive, very aggressive. And I am familiar with the broad contours of that case. Didn't get very much attention, but the point that was made by the court, and I think you're right, I think it was the Supreme Court, is that Trump's Twitter account and feed were serving a public function. In fact, they said since it was being operated by the President of the United States, it was absolutely and obviously a public venue protected by the First Amendment. Now, the argument there has to be, I would have thought it was a very powerful one, that if you close if you're not allowed to close down comments on the thread of such a First Amendment protected account, then obviously you shouldn't be able to close down the whole account, because again, the First Amendment attaches. I wonder whether the plan all along was to close this account the day after Donald Trump ceased to be president, and then it was brought forward by a couple of days in response to the events of the last week or so, and whether that is going to prove to be a serious mistake, by the way, because I would have thought that Donald Trump now has a clear route to legal action if he wishes to pursue it, take it all the way up to the Supreme Court. It doesn't matter whether he ceases to be president, because he can say that he was restricted for the 11 days or so that he remains president. And seek very substantial compensation for Twitter because of it. I think what might also happen is that in the way that often takes place in cases of this kind, is that others might piggyback onto that case and bring claims of their own. And Twitter could find itself facing very substantial litigation indeed, brought from all sorts of people, raising all sorts of uncomfortable issues, both for Twitter itself and for other possible tech companies. And this action may have opened the gates to that. Now, I understand that Twitter, unlike some other tech companies, does not have especially deep pockets. And I think it could find itself facing very high costs, both in defending these proceedings. And of course, if the decisions go against it, as must seem highly possible, indeed, perhaps even likely, then paying the damages, the compensation that it might be ordered to pay. So I think Twitter is, shall we say, walking on extremely thin ice at the moment. I gather, as I said, it's losing, I mean, hundreds of thousands of people, perhaps more than that, far more than that. And it's opened itself up to legal action. And that legal action may have consequences going forward also.
Yeah, the dumbest business decision in history. That's what this is going to go down as, because I've never seen a business actually actively try to remove half of their client base, half of the population from their service. Literally, try to remove half of the population from using your service. Incredibly dumb business decision. Alexander, the Biden administration and Joe Biden himself is throwing around the world the word, the new word, the buzzword now is domestic terrorism. And this seems to be the next step in what they have planned for the citizens of the United States of America that don't agree with their policies. And so much for being the great uniter, Joe Biden called everyone that that seems to be aligned with Trump or the America First movement. He's labeled them essentially domestic terrorism, a terrible, terrible mistake.
Yes,
on Biden's part, an absolutely terrible mistake. But I wonder if Biden is aware of what he's being put up to do, because from reading an Off-Guardian article, it seems that all of this was planned well in advance, the domestic terrorism buzzword. Off-Guardian lays out how the Washington Post, the Council on Foreign Relations, Georgetown University's, from September, they have been preparing the way with various articles and papers as to how to shift from the Patriot Act and international terrorism, how to shift things over to focus in on domestic terrorism. This was a terrible, terrible blunder, but it may not have been a blunder. I mean, it seems that this was actually well planned so that Biden would say these things. But Biden is walking into a terrible future here by saying these words. Terrible.
Absolutely. And you can already see, by the way, some people on the left who are concerned about these issues and understand how dangerous all these concepts like domestic terrorism apparently defined in the broadest possible terms may be used, are already starting to become very concerned about it. I mean, Glenn Greenwald has written, I think now, two articles, and he's done posts in various other places and interviews saying that, you know, this is going to lead potentially into all sorts of very dark places. And I mean, he's absolutely right. And I think anybody has to be concerned. And of course, one should also be concerned that, you know, it can be used at the moment. It's targeting Trump supporters, but it could very easily be spun round. So, you know, if the United States finds itself in another war type situation and there is opposition to that war, in the way that there was, for example, to the Iraq war, then some of these concepts and ideas might be redirected against people who are opposed to those sort of wars. Can I just say the background to all of this is that there's been this drumbeat for years now in the media about the threat in the United States of right-wing terrorism. You read about it in the Washington Post. The FBI, no less, has given some credence to this claim. I've never seen it actually happen, except in that one instance when, was it a man called McVeigh, I think his name was, planted a bomb, I think it was in Oklahoma, many years ago. I mean, this seems to me to be, from my perspective in London, something of a phantom. It's something people always, you know, some people on the left like to talk about, but it's never seemed to me to have very, very much reality. As I said, there was Timothy McVeigh, but it never seemed to me to be really beyond him. I mean, he clearly was an extremely violent, very unbalanced, very dangerous individual, but an individual acting essentially alone. I mean, that seems to me quite clear. And I think that what we're now seeing is that following the events on the 6th of January, this trope that has existed for a long time is now being given all kinds of force in order to justify extraordinary measures which are intended to address, or at least are being presented as addressing, a problem which does not exist and which has the potential to be used in all kinds of ways that could be ultimately extremely destructive, including potentially destructive towards some of the people who are currently advocating it. Bad decisions have bad consequences. That is an iron law, and this is an example of that.
Yeah, hate speech plus the racism, these words that they've been using now for the past, you know, 4 or 5 years, that they've really been speeding up the connection of these words, hate speech, racism, and now it's being connected to domestic terrorism. So, you know, if you commit any type of hate speech, whatever that even means, no one really knows. Or if you're a racist, which seems to be nowadays, everybody seems to be a racist in one form or another, then you're going to be labeled a domestic terrorist. And obviously the enforcement is going to take place on two levels, one via the government and one level via big tech. So that's pretty much where they're taking this.
Well, indeed. I mean, can I just say, I mean, there are certain forms of speech which, you know, can be justifiably considered offenses. Some things do take the forms of incitement, for example. But what is now, I think, in danger of happening is that these labels are being attached to various forms of statements, activities, expressions, views, which are being in effect criminalized, even though they were not criminalized before, and that we are in a situation where definitions are disintegrating, but the labels are being attached to things as routes towards using the law in ways that the law in the United States has never been used before. Can I say very quickly one thing? The United States has the safeguard of its constitution. The constitution is still there. And I do wonder whether these, you know, broad brush definitions like domestic terrorism and any laws that are constructed around them are ultimately consistent with the Constitution. I would have said not. And provided the Supreme Court of the United States functions properly, and I think on these sort of issues, it probably will, I wonder whether these laws, in the end, are going to become fully, are going to stand the test. The only thing I will say is that, of course, until they reach the legal challenges reach the Supreme Court, which I predict they will, we could very well find an enormous amount of damage being done in the meantime, just as enormous amount of damage is being done to people's free speech and to the protections of free speech that the Constitution provides by all the actions that we have already seen being taken by companies like Twitter, for example. So I predict it will all eventually end up in the courts. It will all eventually end up in the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court will face an enormous test and challenge when it does. But this is one issue which I think it cannot sidestep. And I think that given the views of some of the justices in the Supreme Court, I would have thought that all of these various pieces of legislation that are being proposed, all these broad brush definitions, all these bans that we've been seeing, are going to face serious problems when they do arrive at the Supreme Court. That may take a year, 2 years, who knows how long. An enormous amount of damage could be done in the meantime.
Yeah, a lot of damage is already being done. But at the end of the day, this brings us full circle to Parler. And I expect, once again, I expect Parler to be fine. But really what this is all about is a different type of United States, one that's run by the oligarchs, these massive multinational corporations and these billionaires, not worth $1 or $5 billion, these guys that are worth $50 billion plus. And now you're looking at Parler and you have this cartel which is saying, we're just going to shut down competition. And how are we going to do it? We're just going to label them hate speech and racism, even though that's completely not even close to the truth. But that's how we're going to label them. And then they'll get labeled domestic terrorists. And that's how we'll shut them down. And eventually this will end up, you know, reaching the level where the coffee shop on the corner that's starting to gain traction will just get attacked by Starbucks. And Starbucks will just say, you know what? Alex's coffee shop, which went from one store to 10, is, you know, these guys could actually be competition from us. So you know what? I think the guys that work there are racists and they commit hate speech. So domestic terrorism, let's shut them down. I mean, I'm being hyperbolic here, but
you're not being hyperbolic.
It's going to move from online to offline.
Well, you're not being hyperbolic at all, because you could say, I mean, you know, let's say a big coffee chain facing competition from a growing coffee chain could say that, you know, some of the customers who are turning up at this coffee chain, this small growing coffee chain, have all kinds of dangerous views, and the new coffee chain is not taking proper steps to prevent the meeting there, where they might be plotting or conspiring to do who knows what. And then the big coffee chain uses that argument as a pretext to start taking action to close down the small coffee chain. I can very easily see that happening. And bear in mind, that's the argument that's currently being made about Parler. Parler is not being... The people who work at Parler, the allegation that's been made about Parler is that it is not controlling or restricting the kind of views that are being expressed on Parler. And you could argue the same about, you know, a small coffee chain. People turn up at the coffee chain, they meet there, they meet at one of its coffee places, its cafes, and they talk about various things, and that's dangerous and it should be controlled. And if it's not controlled, action should be taken against that coffee chain that isn't controlling what goes on in its cafes. It is very easy to see how you can go from one step to another. It may seem hyperbolic. It may seem dangerous. You may seem that, you know, this isn't going to happen and it's fanciful. But when you start taking these kind of steps, saying that one person is responsible for what other people might do if they use use the first person's facilities, then of course that begins to become a route towards all kinds of things which could be extremely dangerous. I don't think it's going to work, because ultimately, as I said, the entire constitutional and legal culture of the United States is against it. And if we're talking about, you know, the opinions of the population, we're talking about hundreds of millions of people who I think would not be prepared to accept these kind of restrictions on their freedom, you know, as to what sort of lawful opinions they're allowed to express and as to which cafes they can sit and meet in. So I think it wouldn't work, but a lot of damage would be done along the way. Can I say cartels have existed in the United States before? They're not new. And the United States sooner or later eventually gets round to putting an end to them. In the early 1900s, there was a major battle against Standard Oil, which was Rockefeller's company, which had the effective monopoly on oil in the United States. And it didn't look as if it would be possible to challenge Standard Oil. And of course, eventually it was challenged and it was broken up. So yeah, it's not, you know, this is not unprecedented.
Okay, so this leads me to my final question. It's not unprecedented, but I think here's the difference. I think for the first time in history, you're actually seeing the corporations actively move to take over the government. Now, we all know that corporations have lobbyists and the Wall Street bankers and all the big companies, military industrial complex, they have the lobbyists. They pay off the politicians, and the politicians then implement policy that's favorable to them. But I think you're seeing, in the first time in history in the United States, I think you're actually seeing the corporations make a move to just take over and control the government outright. You know, forget the lobbyists, forget the middlemen. We're coming in to take over. And I say that because, you know, they're screaming coup after what happened on the 6th. They're screaming, it was a coup, ridiculous stuff like that. And to me, that signals, that's the projection, that while they're screaming it's a coup at say the America First crowd and the Patriots, it signals to me that they're the ones that are actually instigating a coup at the very moment that they're screaming it. Pure projection. And the corporations that are doing this right now to take over the country, it fits in almost lockstep with the lockdowns. Because the two seem to go hand in hand. They're taking over the country. They're implementing via their proxy, Biden-Harris. They're implementing this domestic terrorism stuff, this hate speech, this racism stuff that they're putting through. And you also have the lockdowns taking place, which are just suffocating small to medium-sized businesses as well. So it all seems to be moving in parallel very quickly now. And we're going to see a corporate capture of the U.S. government.
Well, the United States, I think what has happened in the United States over the last 30 years or so is that there's been an extraordinary concentration of power, economic power, within a very small group of people. What is unusual about this, I mean, there have been other periods in history when a small group of people, a small group of companies have achieved enormous amount of economic power. I mean, there was the time of the robber barons, the Gilded Age, those kind of things. But what is unusual this time is that the same people who have this enormous amount of economic power simultaneously control the information space. And that is new. That has never happened before. When I say control, they aspire to control the information space. And that is extremely unhealthy. Now, the combination of this extraordinary amount of economic power and the control of the information space gives them an enormous amount of political power. And it gives them the power to weigh in very heavily on the politicians who are, on the one hand, increasingly reliant upon the donations that come from these people. And in the United States, you need lots of money to run campaigns, but they're also reliant upon the support of these small group of companies for the information space, the ability to convey your ideas, to say what you want, without which it is impossible for politicians to operate. So this is giving these companies an extraordinary degree of control, which, of course, they are using to buttress this enormous power that they have already achieved. As I said, I predict that in spite of this, and in spite of the very dangerous connections to politicians and the very overt political role that some of them are now taking, I predict that in the end it will fail, because as the political, constitutional and legal antibodies which exist in the United States against this kind of concentration are now going to start to kick in. We are at the moment still in the immediate aftermath of the events of the last few weeks. So there is an atmosphere of shock, and during that sort of time, all sorts of things are said. People don't necessarily speak out against them because they don't want to be involved. But as we move further away and you start to see normal political activity resume, people will look back on the events that are now happening. And at that point, you will start to see more challenges arising.
Yeah. All right. We will end it there. Alexander McCurse, thank you very much, guys. Follow us on BitChute, on Parler, on Gab, on Minds, on Odyssey, and on Rumble. You will find us there. And of course, the Durant Shop. You will get great merchandise at PayPal, Patreon, Subscribestar, and Bitcoin.
Absolutely. Remember, please do come to our shop, buy the great things there, our amazing magic mugs, our phenomenal T-shirts, our amazing sweatshirts, the extraordinary hoodies that you can see Alex wearing one of them at the moment, our hats, our stickers, and please also subscribe to our various channels, both this one, the Durant main channel, and Alex's channel, and my own channel, which has been starting up over the course of this month, and which you can find links to all these channels underneath this video. And please join us for our next program.
All right, Alexander McCurse, thank you very much. Take care, everybody.